Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Hello, this is Hillary Hendershot, your host, and welcome to episode 53 of Profit Boss Radio. Today's episode is called How to Start Out Financially on the Right Foot. Profit Boss, I didn't know that when I got on the phone with many of you in the October timeframe, because it was Women's Financial Freedom Month, that a lot of your questions centered around how to start out financially. And so I thought I would do a whole episode dedicated to it so that you have a resource and a guide. And then just to help you out even more, I have essentially taken the show notes from today. Almost everything I'm about to say is in a PDF guide that's all pretty and nice and slick for you that you can download if you go to HillaryHendershot.com/53. So here we go with how to start out on the right foot financially. Okay, so ideally when you're starting out, you've just graduated from college or you've just got your first sort of high paying, well, probably medium paying job, and you're in your early 20s and the money starts flowing in and you're thinking, okay, what do I do with it now? Now, that's the ideal scenario. What's a realistic scenario? This is how it goes for most people. You're in your mid to late 30s. You've got some debt. You have fairly high overhead, probably a high rent for your house or maybe a mortgage. You have a car payment. Maybe you have IRS debt. And all of a sudden you realize you have not been thinking about the future. And you start hunting around in your podcast app for a podcast you can listen to. You found Profit Boss Radio. And now you're wondering, what the heck do I do now? So if you're in that realistic scenario, you have two things working against you. One is bad habits. You are spending too much. If you have debt, any kind of debt that lingers with you, you know that you're spending too much, and the debt. So you have bad habits and you have debt. Those things are working against you in that realistic scenario, but all those things are surmountable. I changed mine and you can change yours. So as all good coaching starts with a goal in mind, we are going to declare that our goal eventually is financial freedom. And that's even if you don't think you want to retire. I can't tell you how many times I hear this. People say, oh, I'm an information worker. I use my mind, not my body. I'm just going to work forever. Yeah, that's just not how it goes. And even if you don't agree with me now, this money that we're going to be saving, your portfolio, your nest egg, your financial freedom, is your insurance policy. Your body and energy will not last forever. And financial freedom is where the income you can draw from your savings will replace your earned income for the rest of your life. And a rule of thumb for that, just to give you a sense of where you're headed, you need about $1 million saved for every $30,000 to $40,000 you want to live on in retirement. And that is given a safe withdrawal rate of 3 to 4%. And Dr. Wade Fow and I talked about that in episode 42 of Profit Boss Radio. If you want to go check out the conversation about safe withdrawal rates, that episode is called Three Things Your Financial Advisor Won't Tell You. So if you want to live on $100,000 in retirement, let's just make this real, you need to target $2.5 million in savings. However, that number doesn't even take inflation into account, and the normal price level will approximately double about every 29 years, assuming 2.5% inflation, which it looks like is about where we're at right now. Actually, economic estimates are coming out at 2%. I like to be conservative. We used to say 3 to 3.5, so it feels crazy for me to go to 2. So I'm saying 2.5%. So if you're 30 and you want to retire in 30 years, on $100,000 in today's income, you're actually going to need $200,000 in 30 years to feel like $100,000 today. So you actually need $5 million in savings. Do not let that frustrate you or disenchant you, okay? That math is accurate. It's not a typo. And with that amount of money, you can retire securely at the age of 60. And if you're smart and you have a good retirement income distribution generation philosophy and strategy, you can righteously expect that money to last the rest of your life, which, by the way, if you make it to age 60, probably at that point, your expected lifespan is like age 95 or 100. That's like 35 or 40 years without working. That's a huge deal. And medical expenses so far in the United States are only going up. And so we need to make sure you're adequately financially prepared. So yeah, if you want to live on $100,000 of today's dollars and you're age 30 right now and you want to retire at age 60, you need $5 million in savings. So stop saying, I don't need to be a millionaire. I don't want to hear anyone who listens to this show saying that. Incidentally, as a sidebar, with a professional portfolio, if you have high returns and lower volatility, you may be able to pull more than 3-4% from your portfolio. For example, in my practice, many of you know I'm a financial advisor, I have commonly been paying clients 5-6% for years. Obviously, getting a raise like that is a big deal in retirement. It lowers the portfolio size required from 2.5 in the last example to 2 million. Or in the case of the future dollars, I said you needed 5 million, you actually only need 4 million. And so that's counterintuitive. Most people think hiring a financial advisor is expensive. But in this case, I just gave you a scenario where it probably saves you $1 million. That's a big deal. So if you want more information on that, just send us an email at hillary@hillaryhendershot.com. And always remember, Hillary has one L. Moving on, the rules that we're going to follow. You have to always follow these rules 100%. I'm not saying I always followed them 100%. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is if you're not following these rules, you're not on your way to financial freedom. Okay. Rule number one, have gainful employment or be working hard to build a profitable business where you're paying yourself a healthy income. You got to have high cash flow. Number two, avoid debt. Avoid debt, avoid debt. Let me clarify, avoid debt that isn't mortgage debt. If you've got a 20% down payment and you can afford the payment, go ahead and consider buying real estate. And I'm going to talk more about real estate later in this episode. Number three, rule number three, manage your cash flow carefully and automate your savings. If you have high income coming in and you're spending it all, we are lost. You must spend less than you make. I recommend you start out wherever you are saving 20% of your net income. That's take home after taxes. So if your paycheck is $1,000, I recommend you try to save $200. If you're in your late 30s or 40s, you might need to start at 30%. So if your paycheck is $1,000, you need to be saving $300 per paycheck. Excuse me, your net paycheck or take home pay. A guide for automating your finances, I call it the Profit Boss Automation Method, is included in the guide that I'm offering you as a free resource after listening to today's episode. So you're going to start out in phase one. I've divided this into three phases. And by the way, phase three isn't included in this recording because this is about how to get started. And in my opinion, once you're at phase three, you have an entirely different perspective and needs and resources, and you need just a different set of things. So we're talking about phase one and phase two in this episode. First, getting started. Open a basic checking account. I don't care if you use a credit union or a bank. I use Chase Bank. I think if I had it to do again for various sort of human reasons, I would go with a credit union, but I don't think it's a big deal. For me, I just don't like not having access to ATMs that work with my card. I don't want to pay $3 to get cash out if I don't have to. So I like working with a national chain. I haven't had a bad experience with Chase. It's fine. Also, open a basic savings account. It can be at the same bank. Call this savings account your curveball account. You can literally name it that. And that way, when you log in online and see the account and the balance, it will say curveball account. That's your what most people call emergency savings. But if you listen to me or know anything about what I teach and what I believe about money, is that language is important. And I don't choose to use the word emergency around my money. I don't choose to have financial emergencies anymore. I've had those and they suck. So set up automatic savings into this account until its balance is 6 months of your overhead if you are a single person and 3 months of your overhead if you are married. Overhead are your pre-existing expenses. If you have debt, continue to make minimum payments plus 10% on the debt during this time period while you're saving into your Curveball account. I would like for you to be doing both at once. The reason being is because every time something comes up that's unexpected, you're just going to put more debt on that credit card, and that is demotivating. So that means if your minimum credit card payment is $100, pay $110. You got to pay more than that minimum payment. The fourth part of phase one is if you work for an employer that offers a company match for contributions to a 401k, maximize that match. And that is all. Don't save more than that now in your 401k. If you have debt, you are paying off debt as fast as you can, but you want to take that free money. Okay. Number five under getting started phase one is once your Curveball account is filled, dedicate that savings that was going into your Curveball account. Say you were putting $300 a month into that account. Now dedicate that to paying off debt. So now you're paying off debt even more quickly. You can save in a retirement account at the same time you're paying off debt if and only if your debt is at less than 5% interest rate. So basically not if you have credit card debt, because it's very rare for people to have credit card rates that are less than 5%. And the sixth and final aspect of phase one getting started is once your debt is paid and your Curveball account is fully funded, you move to phase two. I hope you never come back to phase one. That's your goal. You're buttoning up the hatches here. You're like a squirrel storing nuts for the winter. And once they're yours, they're yours. Don't go backwards financially. It hurts. Guidelines during phase one. First guideline, keep your expenses as low as you possibly can. Housing costs and transportation costs are what kill most people's financial dreams. You must right-size your expenses. Number two, do everything you can do to not have to buy a new car. Assuming you have a car during phase one, I never want you to borrow money for a depreciating asset again. And I see so many people with credit card debt and no savings and a $40,000 car. It's nuts. It makes no sense. It's completely out of whack. You have got to keep the price of that car extremely low. Do not buy another car if you can at all help it. I recommend, and even if you do have to buy a new car, buy the least expensive car you can get. Spend less than $10,000. I don't care what you have to do. Drive that puppy into the ground. I don't care how embarrassing you think it is. Financial failure, I promise you, is far more embarrassing. Guideline number three, you will probably feel like you are sacrificing and doing without. This is character building. It's a good thing. You're earning your stripes and you're becoming someone who appreciates things. Guideline four during phase one, get out of this phase as fast as you can. All right, let's talk about phase two. I call this taking off. Phase one was getting started. Phase two is taking off. All right. Number one, if you have access to a 401k through your employer, make it your top goal to save the most you can in that account. This is one of the only tax benefits Congress will give you. You should maximize it. So in 2017, assuming you're under age 50, the max you can contribute to a 401k is $18,000. So I would love for you to be contributing the full $18,000 as soon as you can. Number two, under phase two, if you don't have access to a 401k or if you have money left over after you save the max there, now you should open a Roth IRA if your income is within the contribution limits. If you don't know what those are, I've included a link in the guide at hillaryhendershot.com/53. I recommend you open a Roth IRA at Charles Schwab, but you can choose any brand name custodian. Trust the names that have been in the business long term, not the ones that have the best mobile app or the cheapest transactions costs, okay? In 2017, assuming you're under age 50, the maximum you can contribute to a Roth IRA is $5,500 per year. Number three under phase two, another option is to contribute to a traditional IRA. That's the same maximum contribution as the Roth IRA I just mentioned. But honestly, it's probably better to diversify your savings method so that the Roth IRA is kind of the opposite tax-wise as the 401k and the traditional IRA. So the 401k and the traditional IRA are on one side and the Roth IRA is on the other. And with the 401k and the traditional IRA, you contribute pre-tax dollars and then you pay pay tax on the distributions. And with the Roth IRA, you contribute after-tax dollars, and there's no tax on the distributions. Again, Charles Schwab is a great option for the traditional IRA. You can buy almost any mutual fund or ETF in the world at Charles Schwab. Number four, under phase two, if you max out the Roth, or if your income is too high for the Roth and you max out your traditional IRA, that's when you start saving in a brokerage account. That's just another type of account that you can invest in index funds in. You can also open one at Charles Schwab. It's for non-tax advantage savings. So you contribute after-tax dollars, and then you owe what's called capital gains tax on any profitable transactions. You can also log capital losses if you have negative returns in a particular year and you do what's called tax loss harvesting. Number five, under phase two, you also need multiple savings accounts for other shorter term financial goals like vacations, your next car. I highly recommend that you buy a car that's a year old. Buying a new car is very expensive. You pay a big premium. You need a savings account for the holidays. Maybe you travel to see family or you buy a lot of gifts. You definitely want to save for that. If you have kids and you want to pay for their college tuition, you need a savings account for that, probably a 529. So in phase two, you set these up and you are funding them. Again, you can see the guide at hillaryhendershot.com/53 for a video tutorial and other cheat sheets that will help you set up your own Profit Boss automation system. I will say off the top, these videos are a little old. They were about 18 months ago used as a launch for a program that I no longer offer. I'm reconfiguring it and modernizing it and making it better. And so, you know, the videos are not my highest production quality material, but the content is solid. So please forgive me for, you know, you can like see my family photos in the background. It's kind of funny. The sixth thing to do under phase two, taking off, in my opinion, professional, technical, and educated opinion, you should adopt an index fund investment strategy in your Roth IRA, your traditional IRA, your 401k. Every 401k mutual fund lineup has an option for an index fund. It's almost always, in almost 100% of cases, it's an S&P 500 index fund. Now, if you want more information about what is index fund investing, go to episode 26 of Profit Boss Radio, which is called Index Funds, Security and High Returns Demystified, with me and Barbara Friedberg. And you can learn more about the wisdom of index fund investing. I talk about it kind of all the time on this show. But there is a lot of reason to believe that that kind of investment strategy is going to serve you best over the long run. Guidelines under phase number two. Number one, use a calculator and determine your savings before you spend. This is what the Profit Boss automation system does for you. And if you do this one thing, you'll be light years ahead of your friends financially. Remember that spending always rises to the balance of your bank account. Guideline under phase two, number two, pay cash for everything. You can do this in one of three ways. First, literally carry cash. That's not recommended. Obviously, it could get stolen. You can lose it. Another way you can do this is use a debit card for all transactions. This is the way I got myself out of debt and out of trouble. That's a great option. The third way you can do it is use a points credit card for all transactions and pay that points credit card balance off every other week. A good option only if you can be trusted with a credit card. Okay. Guideline number three under phase two, pay cash for your car. Literally write a check or pay for it with money straight out of your savings or checking account. This is the way to financial freedom. The most people want to finance part of their car because they don't want to feel the pain of watching that money leave their checking account. What they don't realize is by financing a $30,000 car and only paying $10,000 for it and financing $20,000, you're actually paying $10,000 more in interest. I want you to feel the pain of those dollars leaving your bank account. I want you to pay cash for cars. Guideline number four, under phase two, you must focus on increasing your income during this period, and your income has to rise faster than your lifestyle costs. Life is going to get expensive. There's more things you're going to want to do. You're going to need resources for more things. So you need to learn to negotiate for raises, learn valuable technical skills. By the way, you must have a technical skill, earn more profit, and bring home the bacon. Just don't spend it. Avoid the trap of permanent increases in your lifestyle, like buying a bigger house or leasing a Mercedes. Guideline number 5 under phase 2, your best bet is to set your lifestyle costs at a level you are fairly comfortable with and then save all your raises, bonuses, and windfalls. I know that some of that savings will get spent on shorter term goals, but it's better than spending on things you won't even remember. Guideline number 6 under phase 2, you are a farmer sowing seeds for harvest. Act like one. At some point during or at the end of phase 2, you are probably going to be ready to consider hiring a financial advisor. At this point, you have more resources, more assets, more choices to make, and frankly, more baggage to deal with. There's an article in the guide that links to and summarizes and concurs with Vanguard's finding that people who hire comprehensive financial advisors have the opportunity to earn approximately 3% more per year than their non-advised counterparts. Life is really complex. Don't go it alone. If you are already part or most of the way through phase 2 and you'd like to talk about whether hiring a financial advisor is the right next step for you, you can chat with me about that. Schedule a complimentary call by emailing me, as I said before, Hillary@HillaryHendershot.com or my toll-free number, 877-569-5508, and make an appointment. Now we're moving on to the next phase or section of this guide, and that is when and how to buy real estate. Many of you have questions about how to buy your first home. So this is specifically about how to buy a home that you're going to live in, not to rent out. I have concerns about buying rental real estate, single family homes. And I've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into it too much in this episode. I will say from a macro perspective, I have a lot of reasons to believe that buying a simple index fund portfolio will perform better for you than trying to become a landlord and buying rental real estate. So this guide is for how to buy your home that you're going to live in. So when to buy real estate. First, you need to realize that home ownership is not your ticket to financial freedom or even wealth. A home is a consumption asset. So people come to me in Silicon Valley, we have $1 million in our home. Okay, great. So what are you going to live in retirement? People think of their home as their retirement savings. Okay, so where are you going to live? Like, you have to live in that. So, and you can't spend your house, right? We don't continue to do cash out refis and spend our home equity while we're retired. It's just not how it goes. So there are lots of ways to achieve financial freedom as a renter. So not only is your home not really a wealth asset or a retirement asset, it's also not a foregone conclusion that you need to buy in order to be financially free. I rent. I've shared that before on this show, and it's for both lifestyle and financial reasons. It makes sense for us now. And so I don't think you need to buy a house. But if you want to, here's how to know if you're ready. You have consistent and reliable income, which means if you run a business, they'll likely want your income to have been consistent for 2 years. I'm assuming that you need a mortgage, that you need to finance about 80% of the purchase price of this home. You may be financially ready if you have a 20% down payment saved, plus about $5,000 to $20,000 for closing costs and transactions costs. I know that's a huge range. There's a huge difference between $5,000 and $20,000, but it's super dependent on where you live. So you need to contact a real estate agent in your area for details like that. And obviously, I'm counting on you to know the approximate purchase price of a home that you're interested in. When I just sort of say off the cuff, a 20% down payment, there's a big deal, a big difference between 20% of 100,000 and 20% of 1 million. But, you know, I'm speaking to people all around the world when I do this show. So I can't help you with local details like that. Another thing, someone in the Profit Boss Facebook group, actually a very lovely human being in the Profit Boss Facebook group, asked me how you can invest your down payment savings. So I think she and her husband are saving for a down payment, and they're saying, our purchase looks like it's about 18 to 24 months away. And how can I earn some returns on this money, but I need to count on it to be there when I need it to be there? Okay, that's very tricky. Interest rates are really, really, really low right now, even though they may be on the rise. Fact of the matter is, you know, a CD is still at about 1%. I mean, just very uninteresting. There's no good answer, no great answer to this question. You might consider putting half of your down payment savings in a CD. That would be a timed CD. So put it in a 12 or 18 or 24 month CD. The longer the time period on the CD, the higher interest rate you can get. And maybe putting half of it, or maybe like two thirds and a third, putting a half or a third of it in an index fund. But understand that is not, I'm not recommending that. That is a bit of a gamble. It is said that money doesn't have any business being in the stock market if it has a lifespan of less than 5 years. There are some exceptions to that. Like, I don't think you should take your kids' tuition savings out of the stock market when they're age 13. But at that point, you are putting more and more and more of that savings into bonds instead of the stock market. Because as we all saw in the year 2008, anything can happen to the stock market in the short run. That was the year the stock market, the S&P 500, lost almost 50% of its value. So again, that is not customized advice. It is one strategy. You're sort of cutting your risk in half because the CD is a sure thing and the index fund isn't. But no matter what you try, you can't blame me or credit me no matter what happens, because I didn't tell you to do that. Again, I'm sorry, but there's just no great answer to that right now. We are still talking about how to know if you're financially ready to buy real estate. Someone in the group asked, what's the best kind of income? The best kind of income to buy real estate is earned income, like wages from a regular job, but you can still qualify with business income as long as you're paying yourself a healthy income. There's no minimum income to buy a house. A mortgage lender can tell you what you qualify for based on your income, so you don't have to worry about that. The third rule of thumb under when to buy real estate is when you know you want to live in one place for at least 5 years. You don't want to have to buy and sell houses more frequently than 5 years, preferably much longer. I mean, after all, real estate transactions cost between $10,000 and $20,000 sometimes. Rule of thumb number four, buy real estate when you need the security and consistency of knowing you won't be asked to move out of a rental. I mean, when you rent, you know, your landlord can come visit you. Your landlord can decide that they want to sell the house and you'll have to move. That's what has happened to us twice now, which is kind of brutal. And so when you want to and need to avoid those kinds of things, probably because you have children, you want them to be able to go to the same schools, that's the right time to buy real estate. Okay. So that's when to buy real estate. Now let's talk about how to buy real estate. The first thing you do is contact a mortgage lender in your area who specializes in working with first-time homebuyers. It might take you some time and research to find out what products are available in your area. In California, I was a mortgage lender in a previous financial career life, and I used to specialize in the CalHFA loan and another down payment assistance loan that was called the CHDAP. And so we would layer in all these programs and get people down payment assistance and a low down payment loan. And that was funded and subsidized by the state of California. So you might Google first-time homebuyer seminar in your area, right? I mean, there are lots of areas that have subsidized funding available. So you're going to have to do your local research. Number two, how to buy real estate, get pre-qualified. The mortgage lender will run your credit report and use your FICO score and your income numbers and tell you how much house you qualify for at current rates. If you don't like that number, you can go then either increase your income, decrease your debt, because credit card minimum payments count against you when it comes to buying a house. So you can go change your financial picture and then go back to the mortgage lender and get pre-qualified again. Then the mortgage lender will tell you how much house you can afford. Do you want to buy the most house you can afford? That's up to you. But remember, that's probably a permanent increase in your lifestyle. Number three, under how to buy real estate, decide how high you want your payment to be. So now that you have the maximum from your mortgage lender, say they say, oh, you can pay $3,000 a month for your mortgage, and you choke and you say, I don't want to pay $3,000 a month. How about $2,000 a month? How much house will that get me? And your mortgage lender will tell you. And then you can find a real estate agent you trust who is willing to house hunt with you. Real estate agents, kind of the career progression for them is they work with buyers in the beginning of their career, and then later they only want to work with sellers. So you're going to need someone who's young and energetic or young in their career and wants to work with you. Number four, under how to buy real estate, make an offer that you are comfortable with. And in my opinion, don't let your agent talk you into removing contractual contingencies in order to close, unless the house is relatively new. I mean, there's nothing worse than giving up the right to back out of the contract before inspections and then finding out that the house is like infested with termites or needs a new roof. And fifth, close, pay, be happy, start paying your mortgage payment right away. Now you own real estate. Okay. So folks also asked for mistakes to avoid. I'm not necessarily the expert on mistakes to avoid. Maybe there's a real estate agent in the group who wants to come on and do an addendum to this show, but I do have some things for you to think about. Number one, in my opinion, you should avoid having homeowners association dues if you can. HOAs are 100% pure expense. They're not tax deductible and they don't contribute to your equity growth. And you can get assessed these huge payments if the HOA gets into a lawsuit, like $5,000 to $20,000. It's insane. If you can't afford a single family residence, a freestanding home, and you need to be in a condo at first, consider a condo complex with no pool or hot tub. It's usually those liability insurance policies that skyrocket the HOAs. Number two, avoid having private mortgage insurance if you can. That's also called PMI. This usually comes if you put less than 20% down. And again, it's a pure cost. So really, you can't afford a house if you don't have 20% down. I'm not saying you shouldn't use a subsidized loan. It's not a value judgment, but that's true. It's like the right metrics to buy a house are with a 20% down payment. You need to have enough skin in the game. Again, not saying don't move forward. If you found something that's going to allow you to buy with less than that, just know that you're kind of in a risky situation. And PMI is a very clear-cut cost that you can see. It's $250, $300, $400 a month that you're just basically losing. It's a pure cost. Number three guideline for buying real estate, do not fall in love with a house. You lose all negotiating power when you get attached to a particular house. There will always be another house, and your job is to get the right price. Number four, just a little tip. Make sure you make a few phone calls and send a few text messages from the home before you make an offer. There is nothing worse than moving into your home and realizing you have no cell signal from your home. Number five guideline under buying real estate, buy when you're ready, not because you think you should. There's nothing wrong with renting, as I said before, and you could end up even better off. I mean, it's a lifestyle decision to buy a home, generally not a financial one. Number six, under guidelines for buying real estate, you need to talk through your buying options with your agent. I'm not going to try to advise you on all of the mistakes you can make because there are so many. Know the neighborhood, know the commute, know what it's like there at night. Check out the neighbors, right? Like stand there for an hour and see if there's barking dogs. I remember we moved into a house a couple years ago in like my first day working from home. There was this dog barking all day and I thought, my goodness, did we make a horrible, horrible mistake? Am I going to have to wear earplugs every day in this home? Luckily, I think that dog was visiting or they were dog sitting the dog, but it didn't go on forever, but I would have lost my freaking mind. And we have come to the end of the Profit Boss, How to Get Started on the Right Foot Financially and Buy Real Estate Guide. I hope you have enjoyed this. I strongly encourage you to go to hillaryhendershot.com/53 and pick up the guide. At the end of the guide, I have a list of resources, including, again, the training videos for the Profit Boss automation system, an article that I wrote about the automation system, an actual infographic to show you how the flows of money magically fill your financial ecosystem and fund your future dreams, and a link to the index funds episode that I mentioned, and bonus, a free training that I call Investing with Freedom so you can learn more and more and more about the wisdom of index investing. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I think about you always. I wish you all the prosperity in the world, and I will see you in the Profit Boss Facebook group.
Hey, Profit Boss. Yes, you. Lean in here. I've got something to tell you. Do you remember that movie Mean Girls with Lindsay, whatever her name is, and the fabulous Tina Fey? It was all about this group of in-girls, the Plastics. And Lindsay Lohan plays the new girl who wants desperately to be part of the clique. You get the picture. Tina Fey was hilarious in that, by the way. Did you know she wrote it? Anyway, I want to tell you about another group on Facebook. It's nothing like the Plastics. I mean, come on, we're not in high school anymore. And seriously, it's much cooler to lift each other up instead of tearing each other down, don't you think? Because as we all know, as women, it can be tough to know who to trust when it comes to getting real about money. That's why I'm so proud of all the courageous women in the Profit Boss Facebook group. It's kind of like hanging out with your best friends. You know, ladies who've earned the right to be called your friend because you're not afraid to show a little bit of vulnerability. It's like that. And by the way, we let the men join too. So if you want to be part of a group of wholehearted women and men who aren't afraid to grow and support each other, give us a visit and bring your friends. Just go to hillaryhendershot.com/profitboss and you'll immediately be redirected to a place where you can request admission, which we will give you willingly. I'll see you on the inside.
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.